We're holding. I'm gonna hey. I'm gonna Aleph at the Mishnah. Mishnah says, "Hanodim in a dogon." A person makes a neder that he's not going to eat dogon, and we're gonna see what it, now. The word dogon usually means something where a pile is made of the finished product. After they finish making it, then they heap up the grain, for example, where you heat it, you heap it up in a pile. So also a pull on mitzvah yavish, divir a mayor. So the mayor says then he's also going to be also to eat dry pull on mitzvah. We talked about yesterday, pull on mitzvah is some kind of beans that is native to or that grows well in Mitzrayim. I've seen actually one possible translation of it as fava beans, which you can buy even now in the store. Whatever the case, the mayor says that those are considered dogon. Because after all, you make a pile out of them when you finish processing them, just like you would with grain. And also, the chum say that no, dogon means only the five grains, only the five things that are considered grain in halacha that you say mizonas on, that you take challah from, and all kinds of other dinim that apply specifically to those five, which is wheat, barley, spelt, rye, and oats. Continues the Mishnah. Rameir Omer had no diminat tvua. Rameir also says that if a person makes a neder that he's not going to eat tvua, and we have to define what tvua is. Ena also el machameshes aminim. So now Rameir says that he's going to be also only in chameshes aminim. So in other words, Rameir is saying that I agree, fine. I agree when it comes to tvua that includes only the chameshes aminim. But dogon, I hold, is a broader term that includes other things as well. Avol, but he continues, Hanodim and Adogon, but I am disagreeing with you, Chachamim, and I say that when a person makes a neder from dogon, also bakol, he is also in any kind of thing which is regularly piled up in a heap. So it would include grain, it would include pola mitzri, and so forth. Which, by the way, the point is, the Tiferes Yisrael makes a point. So in that case, why is he mentioning at the beginning of the Mishnah pula mitzri? Why not other kinds of grains or beans or whatever? And the reason is because in the previous Mishnah we said that pula mitzri, when it's still fresh, is considered yerek. So now the mayor wants us to know that in his opinion, there's a difference whether it's fresh or dry. When it's fresh, it's considered yerek, and when it's dry, it's considered dogon. As opposed to, again, the Chachamim are saying that dogon means only the chamesh saminim. But umutu b'peira se'ilun v'yerek. However, Reb Meir says, I agree that when somebody says that he's also in dogon, he's going to be mutter to eat tree fruits and to eat vegetables because those are not made in a pile. To be exact, I mean, we're talking about making a pile. Really, what we mean is to make really a gurdon out of it. When it comes to grain and pola mitzri and other things like that, you have to go through the process of cleaning them from the stalks and shells and whatever that they come in. So in the case of wheat, for example, and other grains, you go through the whole process of threshing and winnowing and so forth, and eventually you come up with a pile. Eventually you come up with clean grain, which you put in a pile. And the same thing with pola mitzri. You have it comes with the leaves and the stalks and the pods and so forth. So the same idea is you do all that process of cleaning it out of those, and eventually you have a pile of just the beans, and you stack it up in a pile. So that whole process is considered dogon, and it's called digun, actually, is the verb for it. So the mayor holds, therefore, that all those things that go through that kind of processing are called dogon, whereas the Chachamim are saying only chamesh samin. So the mayor is saying, so when it comes to tree fruits, when it comes to vegetables, those don't go through all that process. Therefore, sure, those are not considered dogon. So the Gemara says, well, memra. So does that mean, according to the mayor, that the dogon called a midgan mashma? Does that imply that the word dogon, according to the mayor, means anything that goes through this whole process of digun, this whole process of threshing and winnowing and stacking up and so forth? But the Gemara says, must be Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef says, in that case, I have a contradiction to that. A pasuk in Divrei Yamim describes, so it's talking during the time of Chizkiyahu HaMelech. He worked hard to upgrade the level of learning Torah and of observance of mitzvahs among the Yidden in his times, because before that they had gotten careless with it, especially his father Achaz had been a Rasha. He actually worshipped Avodah Zarah publicly and brought it into the Beis Mikdash and so forth. So Chizkiyahu made tremendous efforts to undo that and to make the Jewish people into a nation of Torah like they're supposed to be. So the pasuk describes how they had been careless with truma and meiser. So Chizkiyahu made a new takana. Instead of, up until now, the farmers would give them individually to the kohenim and levim, the problem was that some farmers would get careless about it. So now Chizkiyahu made a new takana that they should bring them to the Beis Mikdash, and there'll be people over there who'll be responsible for distributing them to the kohenim and levim. And the pasuk says, v'chifroitz hadavar, as the matter spread, in other words, as it became stronger, kifroitz can be like to break through. It can also mean like to become. It can also mean to become stronger. For example, kein yirba v'chein yifroitz. We have in Parashat Shmos. Anyway, so as the takana became stronger, as the Jewish people strengthened in their observance of this mitzvah, Hubub Neisro, Rishis Dogan Tirish v'Yitzar, the Jewish people started bringing lots of Dagon, which on the face of it means grain, and wine and oil, v'chol tvuas sadeh, and all of the produce of the field. The Gemara is leaving out l'roiv. The word l'roiv is actually a few words later in the pasuk. The pasuk continues a maser akol l'roiv evi, and they brought maser of everything in abundance. The point being, Rabbi Yosef is saying, V'yamet Dagon called a midgun mashma. If you're going to tell me that the word Dagon itself already includes, according to the mayor, anything that goes through the process of digun, well then my kifroitz hadavar hubu. Then what are you telling me? That as the matter became stronger, they're bringing more and more. So what do you mean? The pasuk is saying that they brought from Dagon as well as tvuas sadeh, according to the Chachamim that Dagon means only Chameshas Aminim, then fine. Tvuas Sadeh means also things like Pula Mitzvi and other kinds of beans and things like that. But according to the Meir, that Dagon already includes those. And Tvuah, he says, is a narrower category that means only Chameshas Aminim. So according to him, what is the pasuk telling us? That they brought what else are they bringing? If they're already bringing Dagon, which includes, according to him, beans and whatnot, then what else is being added by the Chol Tvuas Sadeh? The answer is Amar Abaye, Lasri, Peres Ha'ilim V'Yerek. So Abaye says that comes to include that they were also bringing tree fruits and vegetables, which, as we said in the Mishnah, even Rav Meir agrees are not considered Dagon because they don't go through the whole process of digging. B'chlal, you have a machlokas rishonim. What types of produce are chayev in truma and maisim and atoda, and which ones are only dirabon? Rashi in a number of places mentions that only grain, grapes, and olives are chayev in truma and maisim and atoda. Everything else is dirabonim. So in that case, what the pasuk is telling us is over here, not only that the Jewish people started getting careful in bringing truma and maaser from grain, grapes, and olives. Grapes and olives are represented by wine and oil, but also the Chachamim at that time made a takana, Chizkiyahu and his Beis Din made a takana, that they should start bringing from other kinds of fruits and from vegetables as well, and the Jewish people accepted that and started doing that. According to the Rambam, Min HaTorah, all tree fruits are chayev in Meiser and in Truma and Meiser anyway. So according to him, the Chiddush was not only that the Jewish people are bringing all the things that they're supposed to in HaTorah, but they're also bringing Truma and Meiser of vegetables and beans and things like that, which is definitely, everybody agrees that those are Dirabana. So the Chachamim would understand the pasuk that they're bringing Truma of grain, and in addition, they're also starting to bring Truma from beans and whatnot. According to the mayor, it's saying they're already bringing truma from grain and beans and things like that, things that go through the process of digun. In addition, they're also bringing truma from fruits and vegetables, which don't go through digun. So the Gemara continues. Then we had, the mayor says in the Mishnah that a person makes a neder, he won't eat tevuah. So the mayor says tevuah means only chameshas aminim. So Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Hakol Moedim Benoedim Benatvua, Chain Also Elam Chameshas Aminim. In fact, everybody agrees to that point, even though it's Reb Meir saying that in the Mishnah, really, in fact, everybody would agree to that point that Tvua means Chameshas Amini. The Machlokas is, what does Dagon mean? Where the Chachamim say that Dagon also means only Chameshas Aminim, and Reb Meir is saying it includes other things as well. And the Gemara says, Tanya Namihachi, in fact, we learn like that in a Blaisa, Shoven, Menodim, and Atvua, they agree, Reb Meir and the Chachamim, when he makes a neder not to eat Tvua, Shein also Elma Chameshas Aminim, that he's also only to eat the Chameshas Aminim. So the Gemara asks, Shita, well, isn't that obvious? Why would we think that Tavua includes other kinds of things as well? And the answer is Ma'ud Tema, Tavua Kalmili Mashma. In fact, you would think the other way around. You would think that maybe Tavua means, all kinds of things that are brought in. So in fact, the word Tavua comes from the Shodesh Boy, which means to come in. And the word Alalta, now the Gemara soon is going to mention, the Aramaic word Alalta, which is the Aramaic equivalent of Tavua. We have all over the place in Targum. And whenever you have the word Tavua in Chumash, you nearly always have that Targum translates it as Alalta. So we're going to discuss that point soon. And the point is, you would think, what is the Shodesh of the word Alalta? So the Rosh explains in particular that the word alauta actually comes from the word ma'ula, which means advantageous, which means made better. So therefore, so you would think then that if alauta means all kinds of things that are made better, that are improved by cultivation, then maybe tvua, which is the Hebrew equivalent, should mean the same thing. Kamash malon. Deloy Mashma Kamili, therefore the Braisa needs to tell us that it's not so. That in fact it may be that Alalta is the translation in Aramaic of the word Tavua, but nevertheless they actually have different meanings. Alalta can mean something broader than Tavua. So in fact the Ran points out that when we talk about Alalta now, he's going to say that Alalta is, he mentions three things. Loshen Bia, Bachnosa, Veshevach. It means bringing in. So in that sense, then it would be the exact parallel to Tavua, because Tavua is brought in, and Alalta would also mean what's brought in. It can also mean Bia, Bachnosa, bringing it in. Veshevach, and also improvement, which would be like what the Rosh is saying, that Alalta comes from the word shevach. So now you could argue, therefore, that since alalta has that broader meaning, then maybe, and you could say, as the Gemara is going to discuss soon, that maybe it includes other kinds of income as well. Maybe you could argue that it includes more than tavua does in Hebrew, or maybe we could say that even tavua itself includes more in Hebrew, and therefore the Mishnah needs to tell us that it's not so, and tavua does mean according to everybody, and the Braisa clarifies that both the Meir and the Chachamim agree that it means only tavua, that it means only grain. Again, Mosiv Rav Yosef. Again, Rav Yosef has the same question from the same pasuk from Divrei Hayamim that we quoted before. V'chifreitz hadover hu b'bnei Yisrael chula. We said that they brought Dagon, and then it also says that they brought b'chol tvua sodeh, all the tvua of the field. So the point is, in other words, that tvua seems to be a broader category. Not just that it includes the five grains. And the answer is, you can answer, Amar Rava, tvua lachud, tvua sodeh lachud. There can be a difference between the word tvua and the word tvua sodeh. Sure, the word tvua sodeh means anything you bring in from the field, so that will include all kinds of crops. Like we said before, the mayor would say, for example, that it means also fruits and vegetables. The Chachamim would say that it includes beans and things like that. But fine, because there it says tvua sodeh. But the word tvua by itself may well mean only chameshus aminim, as the mayor and the Chachamim are saying. Tosfos, by the way, points out that the Gemara is trying to bring a proof specifically from a pasuk in Divrei Hayamim, because, like we talked about the other day, Divrei Hayamim more closely approximates the way people actually speak. You have, let's say, in Chumash, it uses the word Tavua in a lot of places. But Chumash, after all, I mean, obviously the language of Chumash was spoken at one point, but nevertheless, it was dictated by the Eidoshet to Moshe Rabbeinu after all. So therefore, it doesn't necessarily always, with Nedarim, you know, you have to go according to Loshem Ne'adam. So therefore, when they're in the Torah, which is dictated by Hashem to Moshe, not necessarily does it always reflect Loshem Ne'adam the way that people actually spoke day to day. As opposed to Divrei Hayamim, is basically made up of historical records that Ezra and Nehemiah collected together and made Sefer Divrei Hayamim out of. So, of course, I mean, it's written with Ruach HaKodesh. They decided with Ruach HaKodesh what's to be included and what's not to be included and how it's to be phrased. But still, the wording that they use comes from the records that they found. And those records, of course, are going to be written in something more closely approximating the way people use words. So, therefore, we have which is why Rabbi Yosef was trying to bring proofs from there. Okay, so the bottom line is we're saying that according to the Chachamim, Dagon means Chameshes Aminim. Tvua Sada can include that Tvua would be also only Chameshes Aminim. However, Tvua Sada is a broader category that includes all kinds of things that are brought in from the field. According to the Meir, Dagon means anything that goes through the process of Digun, which includes the Chameshes Aminim as well as beans and other things like that. Tvua, according to him, would be a narrower category. Again, only Chamesh Saminim, like the Chachamim. But again, Tvua Sada can be a broader thing, which includes fruit and vegetables and things like that. Okay. So the Gemara tells a story in this connection. So the Gemara tells a story in this connection. Bar Mar Shmuel, the son of Mar Shmuel. Now, Mar Shmuel, Bepashtus does not necessarily mean over here. I mean, it could work out time-wise. It could mean Shmuel, as in the Amor Shmuel, throughout Shas. But we seem to find in other places a Mar Shmuel who actually lived in the time of Rava. So Bepashtus, this is his son. Anyway, Pakid, he gave instructions before he passed away. That they should give 13,000 zuz to Rava out of the alalta from Nahar Panya. So Nahar Panya is a certain river, a certain area in Bava where the son of Mar Shmuel owned property. So he gave instructions that they should take 13,000 zuz from the income that comes from that area, or we're going to see soon what alalta means exactly. And they should give that money to Rav, or they should give the actual produce itself in the value of 13,000 zuz. So Sholcha Rava l'kamei Rav Yosef alalta hechi mikaria. So Rava sends a message to Rav Yosef, his rebbe, and asks him what exactly is included in alalta. What exactly is included in alalta? Which kinds of produce or income or whatever am I entitled to get this 13,000 zuz from? Rabbi Yosef answers, Mas Nisani. Well, you have our Mishnah. V'shavin b'noidim v'natvor, shein also elam ha-chameshes ha-minim. We said that both Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim agree that when you make a neder from Tavua, or actually it was the Braisa was actually what said this, but anyway, that you're only also in chameshes ha-minim. So therefore, it's clear, since alalta is the translation of Tavua, then b'pashas, it means the same thing. So you'll be entitled to collect your 13,000 out of the wheat and the barley and so forth that is grown in that area of Nahar Panya, but not necessarily other kinds of produce or other kinds of income. Amalei Abaya, but Abaya says, like we said before, mi dami, is it similar? It's not really the same thing. Tvua lai mashma elo hachameshes aminim. The fact is, we said that Tvua implies only the hachameshes aminim, but alalta kol mi lemashma. But the word alalta can have a broader meaning because, again, the word alalta can mean, according to the Ran, where it means bia v'achnos of a shevach, where it means something that you bring into the house and that's improved. So that will include much more than chameshes aminim. And according to the Rosh, that it just means meloshin ilui, meloshin making it greater and better. Then also it includes all kinds of things that are not grain, that are not chameshes aminim. So just because alalta is used as the translation of tvua doesn't mean that it would be limited to the same, that it would be limited to being to the same range of meaning as the word tvua. So the Gemara says, Ahadruhu lakameda Rabba. So they brought back the whole discussion to Rabba. They told him what Rav Yosef had said and what Abaya had said on that. And in fact, we showed him talk about that, for example, it's true maybe that Alalta is the translation of Tavua, but for example, the Ritva explains that people use the word Tavua when they're talking about, when they want to talk about what the Torah means it for, which means therefore we said Tavua, not Tavua Sada, which is different, but Tavua means the Hamesha Saminim. But the word Alalta being a word in the common spoken language of Aramaic, then therefore people use it with a broader meaning. So Adrul Hamed the Rava. So they brought back this whole discussion to Rava. Omar, he says, actually, I had no doubt that Alalta means everything, like Abaya is saying, not like Rabbi Yosef. So I knew that Alalta means more than Hamesh Saminim. That's not even what I was asking about. Hodohu di Boyali. Actually, what I was asking about was something else. What would be the din? Would Alalta include also income from rental of houses and rental of boats? So my, what would be the din? Are those included in Alalta? Mi aminin kiven de pochson, would we say that since they depreciate over time, lav alalta, so therefore we can't call them alalta. Maybe alalta includes only things, especially according to the Rosh, that it means that it's actually melosh and shevach. So it would only be things that improve, not things that depreciate. So sure, it would include all kinds of agricultural products, because those keep on getting better, bigger and better. Those don't depreciate. But so maybe alalta would not include income from things that depreciate. Or maybe they're still included in Alalta because it's true that they depreciate, but the depreciation is very, very gradual. It's only over a long time that you notice the depreciation of the house or the boat or whatever. So therefore, maybe, so the fact is, of course, the rental for those includes the depreciation, but you don't necessarily notice it on a day-to-day basis. Over several years, you'll notice it. But maybe therefore they can still be considered. Maybe they can still be considered alalta. Maybe they're still in the category of something that has shevach, that improves. So the Gemara says, "Amru Rabbanan kameid Rav Yosef." So the Chachamim told over to Rav Yosef what Rava had said. Omar. So Rav Yosef says it's not right the way that Rava expressed himself. What did he say? He said, "I didn't have that question." So like he's saying, in other words, like he's saying this that Rav Yosef answered, I didn't even need to ask him that. So if he doesn't need us to ask, he already understood that alalta means everything. Am I shalachlon? Then why did he even send a message to me to ask the shaila in the first place? In other words, he should have clarified. The Shitam Kabbatis explained. He should have said, I know already that alalta means more than just the 5 grains, but I'm asking whether it also includes rentals of houses and boats. Like this, the way that Robert did it, Rav Yosef felt, seemed like a little bit of a lack of derech eretz and a little bit of gassus to say, I already knew that. Ikbad Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef was upset with Rava about that. Shama Rava, so Rava heard what happened, but also Kameh B'mala Yom Kippurim. He came to see Rav Yosef on Erev Yom Kippur. Because Erev Yom Kippur, after all, is a time when you're supposed to be asking chila from people. Why he didn't come earlier. First of all, of course, it's possible that this happened shortly before that, so he figured he might as well come on Erev Yom Kippur. It's also possible that the rest of the year Rava was busy. I mean, the very fact that Bar Mar Shmuel gave him so much money is probably Rava himself was probably a great Rosh Hashiva at that point. And he actually, his yeshiva was in a different city. Rav Yosef lived in Pumbedissa, Rava's yeshiva was in Bechuza. So it's very possible that just Rava didn't have the opportunity earlier in the year to come visit Rav Yosef. For the next part of the story, we have to remember, which we had before in the Masechta, that Rav Yosef was blind. So, Rava came into the house and found that Rabbi Yosef's attendant was pouring and mixing a cup of wine for Rabbi Yosef. We know all over Shas that in those times that in those times they used to mix the wine was too syrupy or too strong or whatever to drink by itself. They would mix it with water. So the Shamash was preparing a cup of wine like that sort of yosef. Omalei, so Rava tells the servant, Havli de'imzig, give it to me. I'll pour it. So this way he'll have a chance to serve his rebbe. Yahavlei, so the Shamash gave it to him. Become mazikil kasa the chamra, and Rav Yosef and Rava poured the cup of wine for Rav Yosef and gave it to him. Ki kashasi, when Rav Yosef was drinking the wine, Omar, he says, Hodin mizga dami the mizga the Rava bread of Yosef acham. This way of the way that the wine is mixed tastes like the way Rava, the son of Rabbi Yosef Bachama, which is the regular Rava in Shas, Rabbi Yosef is calling him by his full name, that tastes like the way the way Rava mixes wine. We find in a few places in Shas that Rava used to mix his wine with more water than most people did. Most people used to do one part wine to two parts water. Rava used to do one part wine to three parts water, so his wine would be more dilute. So now Rabbi Yosef is tasting it. He says, you know, this tastes like the way Rava makes it. Amalei hu nihu. So the Mashamash says, that's him. That's Rava has just poured you that cup of wine. It wasn't me. Again, Rabbi Yosef being blind, he couldn't see that himself. By the way, you have this story is also, part of the story is in the Gemara in Eruvin as well. There actually it tells it a little bit differently. There it says that Rava said it's me. Anyway, Amalei, so Rabbi Yosef tells him, Loi Tesev Akarach, don't sit down. Loi Tesev Akarach literally means don't sit down on your feet. But you don't sit on your feet. You sit on the floor, or you sit on a chair or something. So I think Ben Yehoyada or someplace understand that it means Loi Tesev, don't sit down. Akarach, stay on your feet. Ad the Amat Pirusha Dahadein Milsa, until you tell me the explanation of the following pasuk. My dichtiv, what does it mean? In connection with the be'er, in connection with the well that accompanied the yidden during all the years in the desert. So you have the shiras be'er, you have the song that they sang about it in Parshas Chukas, and the pasuk says, "Umi midbar matana," from the desert it was a present. Umi matana nachliel, and from the so literally in the simple meaning of the pasuk, these are places that. In the simple meaning, these are places that where the well traveled with them from the desert to Matana, or Matana Nachliel, and from there to Nachliel, and Nachliel Bomos, and from there to Bomos. So, in the simple meaning of the pasuk, these are places where the well accompanied them during those last journeys in the Midbar. However, the Gemara is bothered by Marsha points out first of all why is there a shira only for the Be'er? Why is there a similar shira for the Mon and for the other gifts that Hashem gave them in the Midbar? Second of all, why Nachli El? If it just means that it went with them to the valley, then it should just be in Matana Nachal. So therefore, the Gemara understands that there's a Jerusha being hinted at in these psukim. And the point was that the Jerusha that Rabbi Yosef wanted Rava to say over is one that's going to talk about the importance of being humble, of being honored. The point is, in other words, that Rabbi Yosef wanted to warn Rava in the future to be shfal ruach b'Yosef, to be very humble. Like this, Rava had spoken in a way that sounded a little bit with a little bit of break type, a little bit of gassus towards Rabbi Yosef or about Rabbi Yosef. So therefore, Rabbi Yosef wanted to stress to him the importance of in the future not being like that. Also, Shittim Kovetzis brings another point as well, but it means that Rabbi Yosef is certainly willing to forgive Rava. He's certainly not going to bear a grudge. So he's saying that good, you know, you now were mashbil yourself, you lowered yourself to come all the way from your town to me in order to pour me a cup of wine in order to see me personally. So therefore, good. So you accomplished what it's going to say in this drasha about the importance of a Talmid Chacham lowering himself. So Rava answers with the drasha. When a person makes himself like a midbar, which is hefker to everybody, meaning that he's willing to teach Torah to anybody. In fact, the Medrash says that's one reason why the Torah was given in the desert, is that we should realize that Torah is available for everybody to take and to learn, just like the midbar is available for everybody. Anyway, so nitna lo matana, then Hashem brings it about that the Torah is given to him as a present, he doesn't forget it. Maharshal points out, we had earlier in the Masechta, we said that Moshe was learning the Torah again and again, and he kept forgetting it, and Hashem finally gave it to him as a present. Same kind of idea. Moshe was going to be like a midbo. He's teaching Torah freely to the people. We said before, Ma'ani b'china, ma'afata b'china, afatem b'chinam. So therefore, he has this chos that Hashem gave it to him as a present, and he didn't forget it. The kibbutz nit loy matana, then when the Torah is given him as a present, nichaloy keil, then that person, nochaloy keil, then he becomes Hashem's inheritance. Shenema umatona nachliel. That is why the pasuk says, from matona, which also means present. So again, in the simple sense, matona is the name of a place, but we're understanding that it means from the present, from being given the Torah as a present, a person becomes nachliel, the heritage of Hashem. The kivet nochaloy keil, and once Hashem makes it, the mafarish says a little differently. The Torah becomes like a nachla for him; it becomes like his inheritance. Meaning, in other words, not only that he'll have it, but he'll be able to transmit it to the next generation. The kivet nochaloy keil, and then when Hashem makes him his inheritance, or the Torah becomes his inheritance, ola l'gdula, he eventually goes up and becomes great. He becomes a great. He becomes a great Rosh Hashiva or whatever. Because the pasuk continues from Nachliel to Bomos, to the high places, so indicating, in other words, that the person becomes has the schus to be raised up high. But now comes the danger, being Bia Atzma. Now he makes himself too high over there. If he becomes too much of a Baal Gaiva, Hakadosh Baruch Hu Mashpilai, then Hashem will lower him down. Shenema Umi Bomos Hagai. The next pasuk there in Chukah says from the Bomos to the Gai, which means the valley. So Bomos is a high area. Gai is a low valley. So showing that, in other words, that a person is not careful and goes, he can end up going from Bomos and being dropped off in Gai and then down in the low places.
Bomos was
so the simple meaning of Bomos is a high place. In particular, I mean, you have the Bomos can also mean like the high places where they would bring Korbanos to Avodah Zarah and whatever. Yeah, because the pastures, those places would usually be high up off the ground. So generally, Bomos had Gai. Not only that, the person gets sunk down or beaten down into the ground. The pasuk there in Chukas continues that from Bomos it went to Gai by the edge of Moab. In the simple sense, it means it looks down towards the Yeshimon. The Yeshimon is a desolate area over there in the near the corner of the Dead Sea, which is the last area where the Jewish people camped before they crossed the Yarden to go into Eretz Israel. So in the simple sense, the pasuk is saying that this area of Bomos and Gai overlooks the Yeshimon. Rashi mentions on the pasuk over there another point also that the Be'er Shel Miriam, the rock that the well came from, was placed in Yam Kineret. And if you go, and stand in the Yeshimon and look in that direction, then you'll see it from a distance. So that's v'nishkofa al pnei Yishimon. But here the Gemara is darshining that the word v'nishkofa can also mean to be banged down or beaten down. So the word in this week's parasha you have when it talks about the seven skinny ears of grain, Rashi explains that the word in Hebrew it's dakas yishdufois kodim, that they're blasted by the east wind, and Rashi brings over there that Targum Onkelos translates it ushtifon, which means that they're beaten by the wind, that like they've been beaten and banged by the wind, and all of their grain has fallen out. So we see that the shorta shin kofei can mean to beat. So therefore, when Yishkofa is beaten down, al pnei ha-yishimen, on the surface of the Yishimen of this desolate area. So shoik in, we have the way it's printed over here in front of us in the Gemara, shoik in means he's sunken down into the ground. A different gear says actually shoik fin, or he said that character, instead of I and fe, that he's beaten down, banged down into the ground. So, in fact, the Rosh Hash says that sometimes you have in Gematria, sometimes we can take letters that are one next to the other and switch one out for the other. So therefore, the Gemara can darshan v'nishkafa, as though it said v'nishka'a with an ayin, and therefore we can say the Jerusha, like we have it over here, that he's sunken down into the ground. Rashi, by the way, on that pasuk mentions also, and this week's parasha mentions that that's why the lintel of a door is called the mashkoif, because the door always bangs against it. So
what part of that?
That's the top part above the door. So you have like a door stop over there to prevent the door from swinging in the other direction. So the door is always banging against that. So therefore, the lintel was called the mashkel. But the drasha finishes off the imchoizer boy. But if the person does tshuva and realizes he shouldn't be such a Baal Gaiva, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Magdir, then Hashem will lift him back up. Shenema, Kol Gei Yinosei, as a Pasuk says. Now, this Pasuk is nowhere near the other Pasukim. The other ones were from Chumash, from Parashas Chukas. This one is a Pasuk from, this one is a Pasuk from Yeshaya. But nevertheless, we see for Kol Gei Yinosei, every valley will be lifted up high. So we see, even though the person wound up in Mibomis, he went to Agai, nevertheless, don't think that's the end of things. The valleys themselves can be raised up as they will be La'asid Lavan. So that was the whole Darasha. And again, the point was, for Rava to realize in the future not to, to be more careful the way he speaks about, and that now the Taka, he was mashful himself, so now HaKadosh Baruch Hu Magdir, Hashem will lift him back up to how he was before, to be the great Rosh Hashiva and the great Amora that he was. So Rava said it, that Rava repeated it over to Rav Yosef. He had previously learned it from Rav Yosef, the Pashtos, and now Rav Yosef is asking him to say it over in order that it should, that Rava should take the message to heart. Yeah. Okay. The Gemara says, Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Hanoidim in a Dagon, a person makes a neder not to eat Dagon. So now this Braisa is going to be according to, this Braisa is going to be according to the mayor. Also, after Pula Mitzri Yavish, so he's also to eat dry Pula Mitzri, because like we said in the Mishnah, the mayor considers anything that goes through the process of Digun to be called Dagon, and Pula Mitzri goes through that whole process of threshing and winnowing and so forth. However, he is mutter to eat fresh pula mitzri, because those, you don't yet make a gurdon out of that. You just eat it like other vegetables. It's edible, yeah. It's edible either way. But the point is that you don't make a pile of it when it's fresh like that. You only do that when it's dry. Because when it's fresh, you eat it together with its leaves. Like most vegetables. However, the mayor continues, he'll be mutter to eat oires. Most Rishonim translate oiras as rice, and then you have the famous thing where Rashi in some places translates it as millet, and the Alter Rebbe explains because of that we have a suffix on the bracha on it. Anyway, so whatever the case, whether it's rice or whether it's millet, people don't make a gurdon out of it. Again, it doesn't go through that whole process of digun. Also, he will be mutter the chilk of a taugus of a tisni. He'll also be mutter to eat crap grains. We learned a few days ago. We learned actually at the beginning of the parak that you have various kinds of things where they take the grain and crack each grain into two or three or four pieces, and they make certain kinds of cereals or farina or whatever out of it, or firefall or other things like that. So those kinds of things also the person is allowed to eat, because dogon implies only when it's whole. Once it's cracked, once it's broken up, people don't call it dogon anymore. So even though it's a product of dogon, but again, nedarim holocha halosh meon. So therefore, he'd be mutter. Continues the Braisa. Hanodim and peres hashana. A person makes a neder that he's not going to eat from any of the produce that grows this year. Also b'chol peres hashana. Well, then he's also in all of the produce of the, he's going to be also in all the produce that grows that year. And by the way, that would mean, the Gemara is going to talk about soon, about a different word where he uses peres haoretz, where it's going to say that he'll be mutter to eat mushrooms, because those don't grow from the ground. That's why you say shakol on them, as Gemara is going to point out soon. But here where he says peres hashana, the Taz learns, in fact, in Shulchan Aruch, that he will also be also in any mushrooms that grow this year. Because to that extent, they're going to be considered peyres.
The mushrooms grow on
trees. Mushrooms grow on trees or on different other things or whatever. They get their nourishment from the air, basically, not from the ground. Yeah. So the point is, in other words, that even though we're going to say soon that peyres ha'oretz doesn't include mushrooms, but peyres ha'shana does. They are peyres, they're just not peyres ha'oretz. So therefore, so he's going to be also in those as well. Umutter b'gdoyim of atloyim. However, he is mutter to eat the young goats and the young sheep that were born this year. Those are not considered payless because they're not attached to the ground at all. Over cholov of a beitzim, he'll be allowed to eat milk and eggs. Over gezolos and young birds, anything like that that's not at all attached to the ground, he's going to be able to eat.
Birds, by young birds.
Anything. Well, because in there, right, but we mean even the ones who were born this year. The point is that the ones who were born this year. By the way, the Ran points out that the Ran points out that only if he made the neder for a period of time. If he made it an open ended neder, then it's going to be impossible to be mekayim that. He can't forever live without grains or fruits or whatever. Eventually, a person can't live only on meat, and a person can't live only on meat and then milk and eggs and whatever. A person needs carbohydrates as well. So sooner or later he's gonna. So the neder is not gonna be chal in the first place because it's an impossible neder. But if he made the neder, let's say that for the next week I won't eat Peiros Hashana, then fine, that can be chal. The im omar gidule shana alai. But if he says anything that grows this year is also to me also bekulan, then he's gonna be also in the young birds and the newly born birds and then animals and whatnot, because those all grow. Yeah. So that's a broader category than Peiros. Yeah. Continues the Braisa. Hanodim in Peiros Saoretz. What if he makes a neder that he won't eat Peiros Saoretz, the Peiros of the ground, also b'chol Peiros? So then he's going to be also in all kinds of Peiros. So you have the, does that mean that he's also in tree fruits and in vegetables? So the Rosh says exactly that. On the other hand, you look at the way the Mefarish says it seems to imply that he says that maybe in fact it would be only tree fruits. Because he says further about mushrooms, he says because they also grow on trees, implying maybe that if they didn't grow on trees, if they grew on the ground, then maybe they wouldn't be osur. So according to him, Peiros Aretz would include only ones that actually grow from the ground. So he's also an old Peiros that get their nourishment from the ground. But he is mutter to eat mushrooms and truffles, because those are not Peiros Aretz. They don't get their nourishment from the ground. But if he says that anything that grows from the ground is also to me, also bakulam, then he's also them as well, because the fact is they do not from the ground. Things that grow on the ground. Well, mushrooms grow on the ground as well. So therefore,
okay, grow on trees.
So they grow on trees as well as on the ground. Yeah. Okay. So then also Bakulam, so then he'd be also in all of them. So the Gemara asks, Uramini, the Gemara says, I have a contradiction though. So you're telling me that mushrooms are included in Gedulei Karka. But we learn in connection with the Halachas of Brachas, Al Dovershin Gedulei Min Ha'aretz on the Shahakol Mir B'dvarei. Anything that doesn't grow from the ground, you say Shahakol. V'tanya, and we learn in a Braisa, here are some examples. Ala Melach, if you're eating salt, Valazomis and salt water or brine, if you're drinking that, the salt pashtus would be. We're not talking about you eating a large amount of salt. You're eating a pinch of salt or whatever. So then you make a bracha on it. Valazomis or on salt water, Valkmein or pitrius and on mushrooms and truffles, or in the shahakol near bedvara. You say on them shahakol. By the way, the difference between mushrooms and truffles is mushrooms have a part that grows above ground. Truffles grow completely underground. Completely underground. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what we're asking. So you say shakol. Abaye answers mirba rabu me'ara. It's true that they grow on the ground. Menach me'avira yanki v'loy me'ara. But when it comes to getting their nourishment, they get it from the air. They don't actually get it from the ground. They don't have roots to be able to get nourishment from the ground. So therefore, they get it from the air. Even the ones that grow underground, yeah. I mean, enough air penetrates the ground, a couple of inches, for them to be able to get back, yeah. So the Gemara asks, V'okotoni al dovash en gedulam in aretz. What do you mean, though? The Mishnah had said in Brachas, anything that doesn't grow from the ground. These things grow from the ground. The answer is, Toni al dovash en yoinik min aretz. You have to correct it. You have to explain that what the Mishnah means is anything that doesn't get nourished from the ground. Since mushrooms and truffles don't get nourished from the ground, therefore they're shakol. So applying that over here, again, when he said Peiros Haaretz, so he will be mutter to eat mushrooms because they're not Peiros Haaretz. Only if he said Gedulei Karka, if he said things that grow on the ground, well, the fact is they do grow on the ground. And again, before we had, if he says Peiros Hashana, so fine, they are considered Peiros. He didn't mention anything about the ground or not. So then again, the Taz would explain that then mushrooms are also to him as well.
Even though
because they're called Peiros, because the fact is they are produce. They're not Peiros Haaretz, but they're still Peiros of some kind. So yeah. Okay. Mishnah says, Hanodim in Aksus, if a person makes a neder not to, not, are not to wear clothing. Mutter v'sak, so he's still allowed to wear sackcloth, which is made out of a coarser material, such as hair. So, before we get to that, actually, let's run through quickly something that the Ran says over here. He brings from Tesefta more dinim about that, more dinim about foods that are, or drinks that a person might make a neder from. So he says, if a person makes a neder that he won't drink tirosh. Now, we mentioned on Oman Aleph, Dogan tirosh for Yitzhar. In many places in Chumash and in Tanakh, they use the word tirosh to mean wine. However, again, in the Dorim, you go according to Loshim Ne'adam. In Loshim Ne'adam, they don't use tirosh to mean wine. They use it to mean other kinds of sweet drinks. In modern Hebrew, they use it to mean grape juice. But in those times, they use it to mean other kinds of sweet things. Therefore, a person makes a neder not to drink tirosh, then he'll be mutter to drink wine, but he'll also eat these various other sweet things that people use the word tirosh for. Then the Ran goes on to say that in our times, we don't talk Lashon Kodesh anymore. We speak other languages. So now if a person uses the word Tirosh, then in fact he has to realize that he means obviously the word as it's used in Chumash, where there it means wine. Therefore he'll be Osir in wine and Mutter in other kinds of things. So the Mishnah says again, Hanodim and Aksus, the person makes a neder that he's not going to wear clothing. Mutter b'sak, he's still allowed to wear sackcloth, which is made out of hair or out of goat hair or something like that. Uviyavia, he's also allowed to wear a curtain, which is again made out of some kind of thick, coarse clothing, piece of cloth. Uvachamila, and also he's allowed to wear a chamila, which is a kind of thick cloth that a person uses, that a person puts over his head when it's raining. Different explanation in the Mukha Yosef says that it means that when porters are carrying heavy things, they put a pad on their shoulder to keep their shoulder from getting banged up. So then that thing is called a chamila. Whatever, those kinds of things are not considered clothing. It continues. Oma koinam semer oila alai. If he says a koinam, a neder, that wool will not come up on me. Mutter leiskazis begizet semer, he's still allowed to cover himself with shearings of wool. All it is he means that he's not going to wear woolen clothing, but he's allowed to cover himself with shearings of wool. So, in other words, is it that we're focusing on the fact that he said leiskasis implies that he's going to cover himself with clothing, or is it more that so he's not allowed to wear woolen clothing, but would he be allowed to cover himself with it? The Ran seems to say that not. Well, the Ran actually says, yes, she'enu mashma ela levisha, because the word leiskasis implies to wear it, implying that he would actually be able to cover himself, just like to cover himself with a woolen blanket, whereas according to other Mishnah Mefoshim, maybe not. But he's definitely allowed to use shearing pieces of wool, because those for sure are not considered clothing. Similarly, if he makes a neder that flax won't come up on me, then he's allowed to cover himself with bundles of flax, because those are not considered clothing. That's not considered leiskasis. Rabbi Yehuda says, really, it all depends on the situation that the person was at the time of the neder. So, for example, Toan, if he was carrying a bundle, but he's Zia and he was sweating, and therefore now he stinks, and because of that he says, that wool or linen will come up on me, then actually Rabbi Yehuda is saying he will be allowed to wear wool and linen in the future, but also all it means is in the future he's asking himself to carry such bundles. Because the situation was, he stank after he was carrying such a bundle, so now he's making a neder, I'll never do such a thing again. So fine, that's what he's also to do, is to carry such a bundle, but not to wear clothing made out of those materials. So, again, you have the question that you always have with all these things that could mean one thing or another. Why don't we just ask him what he meant? So one possibility could be that he forgot. Another possibility could be that you that Rabbi Yehuda is saying you go according to what people normally mean in this context. In other words, it's not a matter of asking him or not. You assume that he meant what people would normally mean. Okay, so the Gemara says, Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Hanodim and Aksus, more details about what we said in the Mishnah. Person made a neder not to wear clothing, multiple sack. So again, like the Mishnah says, you're allowed to wear a sack over Yeria, or a curtain, over Chamila, or Chamila, which, whatever we said, it was a rain protector, or a shoulder protector, whatever. But also the punda. Now, on the other hand, he's going to be also to wear a punda, which is a hollow belt that you use as a money belt, but that's clothing. So even though you would say it's not really clothing, it doesn't really cover the body, it's more like an accessory, but still it is, the fact is it does function as clothing. Over psikia, also the person is also to wear a psikia, which is a kind of belt, a kind of wide belt. Over skurtia, he's also not allowed to wear a skurtia, which the Gemara is going to define in a few lines what that is. Over katovlia, he's also not allowed to wear a katovlia, which is a piece of clothing, it's something made out of harder leather that they wear over the skurtia. So we'll define soon in the Gemara what a skurtia is, and then over that, as a second layer, over that, where necessary, you would wear katovlia, which is something made out of harder leather. So, like, I guess it would be, like, for example, as the equivalent of a raincoat, kind of. So the fact is, it is clothing. So he's not allowed to wear that. But on Pilia, he's also not allowed to wear socks. Or Plinia, he's also not allowed to wear a Plinia, which is an apron. Or Mechasayim, or pants, for Koiva, or a hat. All of the, actually, Koiva in Gemara terminology may not necessarily mean a hat. It could, but it can also mean like a helmet, like in war or whatever. So all those things are considered clothing, and therefore all of those would be included in his neder. So the Gemara says, "My iskurti." What is this iskurti or skurtia that we just said? Omer Rav Labachana Kituna Detzala. It means a piece of clothing made out of leather. So you would have, like, it would be a leather shirt, kind of, and then over it, if necessary, you would have the katovlia, which is more like a leather jacket, or something like that, or like a raincoat, or maybe like the skurti itself would be like a leather jacket, and then the katovlia would be like a raincoat above that. Whatever the case, both of those are considered malbush, and therefore those are all included in his neder. So now, the Gemara mentions in this connection, Tanya, we learned a Braisa. Now, let's talk about these kinds of things in connection with Hilchos Shabbos. Which of these things are considered clothing in terms of that you're allowed to wear it outdoors on Shabbos? So Tanya, we learned a Braisa, Yotzin b'sat over, you're allowed to go out on Shabbos wearing a thick sack, which actually, the Ran points out, we're going to have in a few lines at the end of the Braisa, we're going to mention shepherds wearing sacks. So therefore, obviously, the sack over here doesn't mean the actual sack itself. It means something made out of sackcloth. So you're allowed to wear that on Shabbos because it's true. We said in the Mishnah that it's not considered clothing as far as a neder, because the majority of you go according to the Lashon Neder. But the fact is, it is something that you can wear on your body. So therefore, you're allowed to wear it outside on Shabbos.
If it's something you do with, then
that's the thing. If it's a place where people normally wear them, then maybe not. What we're talking about, in other words, it's not something that's normally worn. It's not an actual piece of clothing. It's a sack. But nevertheless, the fact is you are able to wrap yourself in it. Therefore, you're legitimately allowed to go out with it on Shabbos. It's not considered that you're carrying.
No.
Yeah. So you're allowed to do that. Over Yeria, over Chamila. Again, you're allowed to wrap yourself in a curtain or put on a Chamila. Mipneg shamim, to protect yourself from the rain. And in fact, the Rosh explains, since you're allowed to wear them when it's rainy, then the halacha would be you're actually allowed to wear them on Shabbos even when it's not rainy. Because once they're considered clothing, then they're considered clothing. One thing though it mentions in Shulchan Aruch is it has to be that you're wearing it in order to protect your body. If you're wearing it to protect another item of clothing, then not. So, for example, you have the rain hats, the plastic rain hats that they put over your hat. Those are more meant to protect your hat from the rain rather than your head. So those are a problem on Shabbos. But the actual hat itself, for example, you're wearing it to protect your head or a raincoat. You're not doing it so much to protect your clothing. You're doing it to prevent yourself from getting wet. So, therefore, such things are mutter.
If it rains very, very hard,
then maybe, because then the rain will go through your hat. Maybe, I don't know. Uh, yeah. So you're allowed to wear such things on Shabbos, because again, even though they're not actual clothing, but the fact is that some people do wear them when it's raining, and then you can wrap yourself in them. Aval loy b'teva, but a person is not allowed to go out on Shabbos wearing a box, v'loy b'kupa, or a basket, v'loy b'machtzelas, or with a mat wrapped around himself. Even though you're doing it to protect yourself from the rain, because those things are not considered clothing at all, so therefore that's carrying on Shabbos. Continues the Braisa. Haroyim yotzim b'sakin. Shepherds are allowed to go out on Shabbos wearing sacks. V'loy royim bilvad omru, and actually that applies not only to shepherds, el kol adam. Everybody is allowed to. El shadibra chacham v'hoigah. The chacham are talking about the common situation. Most commonly, shepherds would do that. They would wear sacks to protect themselves from the rain, but in fact, everybody else is allowed to do that as well. So we said that the person makes a neder not to wear clothing, then he's allowed to wear a sack because it's not considered normal clothing. So, and again, with Nedarim, we go according to Loshim Ne'adam, and Loshim Ne'adam is that sacks are not clothing. But in terms of Hilchas Shabbos, we don't look at it like that. In terms of Hilchas Shabbos, we look at some people do wear these things, therefore they can be considered clothing. As opposed to, for example, we said, let's say a mat or a box or whatever, nobody wears those at all, so those cannot in any way be considered clothing. Those would be considered carrying on Shabbos.
Right, because obviously he's using them because he wants to protect himself.
Right.
So he's carrying it.
Okay. We said in the Mishnah of Yehuda, we said it all goes according to the situation when the person was making the neder. So Tanya, we went to Abaisa. Kate said, Amr of Yehuda, Hakol of Yanoida. What does Yehuda mean by that? Hoya lovush tsemer. Suppose a person was wearing woolen clothes, the heitzar, and he was feeling uncomfortable. So the heitzar, the Ran explains in Moshe tsar, the garment was too, the clothing was too tight on him, and he felt uncomfortable. But on a koinam tsemer, oila alai, and now he said a koinam, that wool will not go on me, also lilbush. Now in the future, he's not allowed to wear wool. Because the fact that he said it after wearing an uncomfortable woolen garment means obviously that he wanted to asser himself to wear woolen garments. But he'd still be allowed to carry a bundle of wool because that wasn't included in his nether because that wasn't the situation. Similarly, how you told Pishton Vizia, if he was carrying a bundle of flax and was sweating, well, I'm a koinam Pishton Oila Alai, and he says a koinam that flax will not go up on me, Mutalilba, she'll be allowed to wear flax in the future, he'll be allowed to wear linen in the future, but also Litton, he's just allowed to carry it, because again, it was bothered by the bundle that he was carrying. Obviously the same thing goes the other way around. If he was wearing an uncomfortable linen garment or carrying a bundle of wool, but the Braisa is giving one example of each one. The Ran says that it seems that the Braisa is actually disagreeing with what Rabbi Yehuda said in the Mishnah. In other words, that we can have two opinions within what Rabbi Yehuda holds. That in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda would be agreeing that that usually by default we would assume that he means to asser such and such kind of clothing to him. Only if we see a specific situation like we had in the Mishnah where he was carrying a bundle of wool or a bundle of flax and was uncomfortable and then made the neder, then we would say he's talking about a neder not to carry it in the future. But otherwise, by default, the Mishnah is saying, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the default would be that he's also to wear. Whereas the Braisa is saying that we always have to look at the situation, and it can be that he asked himself only to carry or only to wear. So the Ran says, in other words, it would come out. So if a person makes the neder stam, then it means he's also to wear them, but he's allowed to carry them. Only if he made the neder after carrying such a bundle, only then would it be the other way around that he's also to carry and mutter to wear. On the other hand, the Rambam disagrees with that, and the Rambam learns that the Mishnah and the Braisa are not contradicting each other. The Braisa is just giving us more detail that always we look at the situation, so it's not even going to be that by default we assume that it means that he doesn't want to wear it. It all depends what the circumstance was when he made the neder. Okay, to be continued tomorrow, Beis Hashem.
Amazing, looks good, two big sides, and
still, yeah. Shukriya, everyone.